Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 29th of November. I'm Sue.
I'm Louise.
And I'm Margaret.
And John is your sound engineer this week. Now, Louise will start us off with the news.
A thief who pestered her ex-boss after penning threatening letters and making nuisance calls has been jailed for 2 years. Alexandra Payne sent 10 letters and made several phone calls to former boss Claire Trumber, despite being forbidden to contact her. The 34-year-old blamed the victim for her downfall after she was caught stealing £2,000 worth of items from Codsall Care Home residents. It was the second time Payne had been locked up for harassing Miss Trumber and breaching a restraining order banning her from making contact with the victim, Birmingham Crown Court heard. Sentencing, Judge Michael Chambers QC said, "This is a serious and worrying case. You blamed Claire Trumber, but obviously it was unfair to do so. You need to understand, you are still relatively young. You have got the rest of your life before you. But if you continue to breach this order or commit any further offences, you are likely to spend many, many years in prison. You need to put this matter behind you and look ahead." Payne was jailed for 8 months in January after admitting she stole £2,000 from elderly residents at Stations Road ProCare Solutions. The criminal, who was working at the care home at the time, was dismissed from her role once her offending came to light. She was released from jail in March when she began to send threatening communications to her victim, prosecutor Mr. Stuart Clarkson said. The former Wolverhampton Racecourse employee ended up back in court after police discovered the intimidating letters, with the court handing her the restraining order on July the 18th. She was also jailed for 6 months, but released on August the 3rd, breaching the court order by contacting Miss Trumber while behind bars and once back home. Defence barrister Mr. Richard Bannister said Payne may be suffering from mental health problems, but she claims she never intended to carry out the threats. He told the court on Friday, "There are issues to do with bereavement, which need to be resolved. It would appear that the catalyst for all of this is the death of her mother, and she has focused wrongly on Miss Trumber, which has led her into confused thinking. She realises there is a problem. She is willing to cooperate. She wants to stop this. She wants to understand herself." Payne of Tintagel Close, Wolverhampton, admitted breach of a restraining order between July the 18th and September the 1st.
Dudley Hippodrome's future develops as Dudley College is interested in the land but would bulldoze the historic theatre. The Hippodrome saga has taken yet another twist, with Dudley College confirming it could swoop in and take over the site if a planned restoration fails. But college bosses admit they have no interest in preserving the 1938 built landmark and would purely be striking a deal for the land on Castle Hill, next to Dudley Zoo. A group formed to protect the former Dudley Hippodrome, called Black Country Hippodrome Limited, were handed the keys and a 5-year lease last year, with the aim of reopening it as a theatre. But it has faced trouble raising funds, and relations between the group and Dudley Council have been tense, and is now waiting to discover whether its request for a 20-year extension to the lease, which they say is necessary to attract the required investment, will be accepted. Meanwhile, college principal Lowell Williams and fellow bosses have held informal discussions with the council officers and are monitoring the position regarding its restoration. College spokeswoman Debbie Good said the area on Castle Hill where the Hippodrome sits would be ideal for the college's future regeneration proposals, which includes a new £30 million university centre. Ms. Good said the Black Country Hippodrome has been given until Christmas to come up with a viable business plan for the building, and that the college would be keeping tabs on discussions, suggesting college bosses are waiting in the wings in the event of a rescue deal collapsing. Miss Good added, "The college hasn't got an interest in running the Hippodrome, but its land it sits on is part of the whole new development corridor." Steve Daniels of Black Country Hippodrome said, "Of course they can talk to who they want to, but it's not ethical when we are planning to go in there." Councillor Ian Kettle, Cabinet Member for Planning and Economic Development, said, "We have had an informal conversation with Dudley College, who made it clear they may be interested in the site, should it become available. We continue to have meetings with a range of potential investors and developers regarding a number of sites in and around Dudley Town Centre. We have entered into a 5-year lease agreement with Black Country Hippodrome Limited, and this is the only agreement in place in relation to the site in question. We have had an informal conversation with Dudley College, who made it clear they may be interested in the site should it ever become available."
A mechanic watched in horror as a stolen 24-ton digger destroyed his restored BMW. Tyler Hambley from New Housing Estate Dalton's Meadow, Netherton, who had his BMW trashed after thieves stole a digger from the nearby construction site, which collided with his car during their getaway. The 96-plate BMW was saved from the depths of the scrapyard only 3 months ago. But now mechanic Tyler Hambley has been left devastated after a thief ran over his pride and joy on Sunday morning. Mr. Hambley, who lives on the New Dalton's Meadow Estate in Netherton, Dudley, said, "About 6:30, there was a massive raucous outside my home, and as I looked out of the window, a stolen digger from the nearby site drove over my car. It's completely destroyed. I kind of looked out the window and I stood there thinking this can't be happening. It was about 20 to 30 seconds. It pushed the car. It was like he actually aimed for it. He pushed it about 20 feet up the road and then crushed the end of it. I'm massively into my cars and I restore the old stuff. And this was a new build that I have just saved from the scrapyard. I brought it in August and I have spent the last 3 months fixing it all up. It deters me from having it in the area. I'm almost at the point of giving up with cars." The 24-ton vehicle, which was being used by builders working on the housing estate, smashed through a fence on Sunday shortly before 6 p.m. and then into the restored BMW. The destruction has left many residents in fear for their safety, but some have stepped up to help out, Mr. Hambley. Following the incident, a GoFundMe page was set up in a bid to raise money for the mechanic, who works at a garage near Cradley Heath, with a total of £1,000. A resident said, "The car is a write-off. He's an expert in car mechanics, but he said, even for his quality, there's no way you can repair this." Tyler's car is still stuck in the road next to the construction site. West Midlands police arrested a 38-year-old man from Wolverhampton in connection with a theft. A spokeswoman said, "Police received a report that a 24-ton digger was stolen from a building site in Saltwold, Dudley, at around 6 p.m. on Sunday. The digger was driven through a fence through Dalton Meadow, where it caused damage to a parked car and into Saltwells Road. A man was arrested after he got out of the digger and was making off from the scene. Persimmon Homes refused to comment. The digger was returned to the site."
Crazy footage has been captured on a dash cam of a woman appearing to be eating from a bowl of cereal on a rush hour commute. The woman can be seen apparently balancing a bowl of cereal and a spoon on her knee without both hands on the steering wheel. The driver captured the footage on his way to work on the Dudley Road, Birmingham. He said, "I was driving to work in the morning when I looked over and saw a woman clearly eating from a bowl of cereal when driving. The first thing I saw was how stupid and dangerous it was. I did wonder what possessed her into thinking eating cereal while driving was a good idea. I personally never eat anything while driving. It could really distract you from driving, as well as stopping you from being able to be fully in control of the steering wheel. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but driving with both hands on the wheel is far more important. Imagine if she had an accident. She'd be crying over spilt milk. Literally."
A doctor carried out 18 sex attacks after duping patients into thinking he was treating their medical problems, a court heard. Dr. Jaswand Rathmore assaulted 8 women to fuel his illicit sexual desire. while he was at the helm of a Dudley surgery, prosecutors alleged. The 60-year-old denies the charges and claims he was performing manual manipulation therapy to help patients complaining of back and hip pain. Opening the case at Wolverhampton Crown Court, prosecutor Miss Heidi Kubik alleged Rathbone had not had the appropriate training to carry out specialist techniques. She said, "This case concerns what the prosecution say were a series of sexual assaults committed by him against 8 separate female patients, under the cover of either diagnosis or treatment of various medical conditions. I suggest that his actions went way beyond that of a legitimate medical treatment and were in fact an excuse to be allowed to touch these complainants in a way that was sexually motivated on his part." Rathmore, who qualified in 1985, alleged attacked the women over almost 7 years while he was the lead GP at the medical practice, the court was told. He told patients he needed to carry out the treatment to alleviate their pain, but instead sexually assaulted the unsuspected women, Miss Kubik said. Patients trusted the family doctor, who had been at the surgery since 1986. When he advised them, his medical examinations were necessary, she added. The prosecutor told jurors the women were not offered a chaperone during examinations, adding, "Agreeing to allow a doctor to touch you for medical purposes is not the same thing as consent to what was, in fact, an inappropriate examination." They didn't question his actions at the time. They accepted that he was the doctor. He must know what he was doing and trusted him to care for them appropriately. He knows their vulnerabilities. He knows who is submissive. He knows, I suggest, that who would be less likely to complain. So it is the prosecutor's case that he abused that trust in order to carry out a series of sexual assaults. Police quizzed Rathmore about the allegations after one woman came forward and told them she had spoken to 2 others who were also allegedly assaulted. A press release disclosing the defendant had been charged then led to further women contacting officers. Rathmore told interviewing officers touching of the women was medically appropriate and he had acted professionally during appointments with patients, Miss Kubik revealed. The defendant of Plowman's Walk, Walheath, denies 18 counts of sexual assault between November the 28th, 2008 and March the 26th, 2015. The trial continues.
Crisps and biscuits gnawed by mice were sold to unsuspecting customers from a rodent-infested shop. A court heard. Husband and wife Al-Ajbinder and Baljit Purewal had displayed nibbled packets of Watsits, squares and biscuits for sale in their cosy store. Mouse droppings were also discovered, scattered across the premises, when health inspectors swarmed the shop. The owners were handed a financial penalty of almost £1,300 after failing to solve the problem. Sentencing at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court, District Judge Michael Wheeler said although no one had been ill, there was a high risk they could have been. Health inspectors swooped on A&B, News Convenience and Off Licence, after receiving a complaint from a customer who spotted evidence of the mice. Inspectors discovered the couple were selling unsafe items of food, including 5 packets of Watsits, a packet of cheese and onion flavoured squares and coconut ring biscuits. Mouse droppings on shelves, counters and the floor were found. There were no pest control in place and they failed to ensure staff had food hygiene training. The couple were ordered to close the Poole Crescent shop to rid it of the rodents and cooperated with the investigation. Both confessed they were aware of the infestation and had been sweeping up the droppings on an almost daily basis, almost, the court was told. Ajbinder Purewal, 45, told the court the pair closed the business for a week. They emptied and cleaned the shelves, chucking out most of the items for sale. The wife, Banjit Purel, said the couple noticed mice have been scurrying across their store, ripping open crisp packets and leaving droppings in January. The shop got a bit neglected for a few days when the couple were busy celebrating their daughter's birthday, she said. This is the first time this has happened, and since then we clean every day. We are sorry. She went on to say, the couple scoured the store for any holes the mice have been slipping through, but only discovered a small one when pest control turned up. The mother also blamed the infestation on a neighbouring council house, which had been neglected and had a number of holes. The couple have since hired pest control to inspect the shop every 2 months. The pair of Paul Crescent Coseley admitted 5 counts of contravening or failing to comply with EU provision concerning food and safety and hygiene on January the 20th. They were each fined £560 and were told to pay £56 victim surcharge and £638.67 costs.
The heartbroken mum of a stillborn baby has raised £1,600 to buy a special cot to help other grieving parents. Kira Pooler from Broyley Hill was 27 weeks pregnant when she found out her son, Rogan Lee, had died. The 21-year-old and her partner, Jake Hildridge, aged 22, were able to spend time with their son after he was born at Russell's Hall Hospital thanks to a cuddle cot, a portable cooling device for babies who are stillborn or die shortly after birth. Kira, who has since had a healthy baby girl called Layla May, now aged 15 months, said, Jake and I were able to have that extra time with Rogan Lee after he was born, and it meant so much to us. My family also got to see him. However, at the time, there was only one device there, and there were 5 other parents who had babies that were born sleeping that day. It meant that they didn't have that special time with their baby like we did. Since the tragedy, which happened more than 2 years ago, Kira has carried out various activities to raise money for another cuddle cot and sell badges and tops with Rogan Lee's charity printed on them. She added, once I had raised enough money, I found out that Russell's Hall didn't need a cuddle cot, so SANS, the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Charity, put a call out to find out which hospitals were in need of the cot. Birmingham City Hospital came forward and Kira was delighted to visit recently and drop off the cuddle cot, adding, I know that it will really help other grieving parents out there who have gone through a similar experience as myself and Drake. Fran Wotton, the hospital's advanced neonatal nurse practitioner, said, we are extremely grateful for the kind and generous donation of this cuddle cot in memory of Rogan Lee. We have complete admiration for the effort and dedication to raise funds needed for the purchase of this cuddle cot. We cannot thank Rogan Lee's parents enough for what they are doing for our unit and for other parents who will benefit massively from another cuddle cot, giving other parents the chance to have precious time with their baby should they sadly go through the same or similar experience. She continued, having this second cuddle cot will provide our parents with the possibility of borrowing a cuddle cot to take their baby home should they wish to. This is something we would not have been able to offer parents prior to this donation, as we need to ensure we always have one available to use.
2 teenagers murdered a 41-year-old man who disturbed them as they burgled his home, a jury heard. Simon Johnson was repeatedly stabbed in a brutal attack that started in his bedroom and continued onto the landing of the 3-bedroom semi in Cradley Road, Netherton, where he lived alone on August the 11th. 6 days earlier, he had invited 3 18-year-olds he met at a nearby pub to his house and showed them a £7,500 crop of cannabis being grown there to one of the group, who stole his mobile phone before leaving, Wolverhampton Crown was told. Then they returned with a replacement on August the 10th. Mr. Simon Dennison, QC, prosecuting, said, they spent the evening drinking and smoking. Mr. Johnson was a trusting man, too trusting as it turned out. He went to bed after locking the front door and telling them to let themselves out of the front window. The trio each stole a cannabis plant before going, but one of them wanted more and returned with 2 other friends, and one of them was a 16-year-old youth. They got in through the unlocked window and stole more cannabis, which was taken back to a house in Sidaway Street, Cradley Heath, where 19-year-old Dan Malola Johnson was living. He wanted some for himself, and he went back to the house in the early hours of August the 11th with the 16-year-old, who knew a man was sleeping at the address because he'd been there before, it was claimed. Mr. Johnson woke while they were in the house and was stabbed 4 times, with one blow almost severing his aorta, claimed the prosecution. His body was found hours later, lying in a haul of cannabis leaves in a bin bag, which allegedly had the fingerprints of the 16-year-old on it. The victim's blood was supposedly on the youth's jacket when he was arrested 2 days later. He has admitted being at the scene, but denies any involvement in the murder, said Mr. Dennison, who continued. He has said that the person who was with him and the person who killed Mr. Johnson is Dan Malola Johnson. Dan Malola Johnson, not related to the victim, has denied being at the house, but was allegedly linked to the crime by forensic evidence, the court heard. Mr. Dennison concluded, he and the 16-year-old broke in together, knowing that the victim could wake up. They took knives from his home and left together. Only they know exactly what happened when Simon Johnson woke up and was killed, but all the evidence that they did things together. Johnson, of no fixed address, denies murder and burglary, while the 16-year-old, who cannot be named, pleads not guilty to murder but admits burglary. The trial continues.
Police who carried out a 7-week search for missing man Matthew Gill say they found a body in woodland near Stourbridge. Mr. Gill, aged 43, also known as Liggy, was last seen leaving his home at 9 a.m. on October the 6th. His disappearance led to the large-scale Find Liggy appeal, including a search by family and friends for surrounding areas. Mr. Gill's devastated family said in a statement last night that he had been found dead. Officers investigating the disappearance of Mr. Gill say they found a body in woodland close to Presswood Drive in Stourton yesterday afternoon. West Midlands Police said the death is not being treated as suspicious, and although the body is yet to be formally identified, it is believed to be that of Mr. Gill. A spokesman said, Mr. Gill's family has been informed and are being supported by specialist officers. A file is now being prepared for the coroner. Police had released images of Mr. Gill's car, which was recovered from Stourton in the days after its disappearance as part of their appeal for information. A statement from Mr. Gill's family said, Matt has inadvertently created something extraordinary at the end of his life. Please always remember how he pulled everyone together, friends and strangers. Posters had been erected during the search, which was also supported by his colleagues from the B&Q store in Kidderminster. His family have asked the posters to be taken down in light of the news.
I&E biting time targets in Wolverhampton have been missed every month so far this year, figures show. The Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, which runs New Cross Hospital, has failed to hit the target of getting 95% of patients seen, treated and either admitted or discharged in under 4 hours since October last year. And with winter pressures piling up, the Trust faces a tough task to improve its performance over the busy Christmas and New Year period. NHS guidelines set out the 4-hour A&E target as one of the core standards health bosses must aim for. Councillor Wendy Thompson, who is the Vice Chair of Wolverhampton Council's Health Scrutiny Committee, said the Hospital Trust is facing enormous pressure, particularly ahead of the winter period. Councillor Thompson told the Express and Star, "The hospital has been coming under huge pressure. Young children, together with an elderly population and the much wider area that the hospital is serving, all add up to enormous pressure for them. There is no such thing as a perfect hospital, but I think taking it all into account, they do a great job. Although patients can go through frustrations in terms of the waiting times, and there are pressure points." Across the Hospital Trust in October, 91.55% of patients were seen, treated and then admitted or discharged in under 4 hours. This was a slight improvement on 91.42% in September, but down on 92.9% in August. Gwen Nuttall, Chief Operating Officer at the Trust, said, "There are a number of national targets that the Trust works hard to achieve. However, over the last 12 months, there are times where this hasn't always been possible. Meeting national targets will always be a challenge, but we are doing all that we can to ensure our patients are not waiting longer than necessary."
A motorist who killed one friend and left another with life-changing injuries in a horror crash, while twice the drink drive limit, was today starting a 7-year jail sentence. Daniel Edge, who had been to a party with Kylie Bullock, aged 21, and 20-year-old Regan Robinson before tragedy struck late at night on April the 9th. It is thought none of them were wearing a seatbelt, a judge heard. The 29-year-old was travelling at grossly excessive speed in an uninsured MGZR along Leemore Lane in Walsall before ploughing into the back of a G4S armoured truck, which was slowing down to make a turn, Wolverhampton Crown Court was told. Another motorist doing 30 miles an hour when he was overtaken by the car shortly before the impact told police, "He flew past me like I was stationary. I thought, you are a nutter." The G4S Mercedes truck was slowing down to between 21 and 14 miles an hour when it was hit on the 2-lane single carriageway road, but was not indicating its intention to turn right, said Mr. Peter Grice, prosecuting. The MG suffered catastrophic damage in the crash, which Edge emerged without serious injury, but front seat passenger Mr. Bullock, a father of one, died at the scene, despite the efforts of the rescuers to save him. Mr. Regan was trapped in the back seat and had to be cut free from the wreckage. He suffered multiple injuries, including bruised lungs, a torn aorta, fractured leg and knee, and dislocated wrist. He underwent 15 operations and spent almost 2 months in hospital. Edge, who had previous convictions but a clean driving licence, took a belated breath test, which the expert said the reading at the time of the accident would have been around 79 micrograms of alcohol in 100 millimetres of breath. The legal limit is 35. Mr. Christopher Loach, defending, maintained there is no evidence of persistent bad driving. He had owned the vehicle for a comparatively short time and, because of his financial situation, purchased insurance for short-time fixed periods. He thought he was insured at the time, but he was wrong. He also deeply regrets he had drunk alcohol. Edge from Coltham Road, Willenhall, pleaded guilty to causing both the death of Mr. Bullock and serious injury to Mr. Robinson through dangerous driving. He further admitted being uninsured and above the alcohol limit. He was jailed for 7 years and banned from driving for 3 years on release by Judge Simon Ward, who told him he had been travelling at grossly excessive speed, and added the driver of the G4S vehicle was braking and had not indicated that he had not started to move out from where he had been to because of the cars parked on his left. The family of Mr. Bullock, who has a twin sister and lost their mother when aged 17, said after the incident, "Kylie was a loving brother, nephew and a father who we'll all miss so much. None of the family can come to terms with this tragic loss. Now he's back with his mum and he's never got over losing."
Drivers were warned against giving money to unlicensed charity collectors who have been stopping traffic in the Black Country. It comes after people dressed in superhero, monkey and animal costumes were seen stopping cars at busy junctions in Albury, Tipton and Dudley. They claim to be collecting for children in need, but Dudley and Samwell Council say they do not have a street permit to collect money for charity in the boroughs. Legitimate children in need collectors do have a permit, the council adds. The collectors have been seen at Birchley Island in Albury, at the junction of Dudley Port and Sedley Road East in Tipton, and at the Burntree Junction on the border with Dudley. They've also been seen at the traffic lights at the junctions of Thorns Road, Quarry Bank and Merry Hill. Council Trading Standards officers are now monitoring the junctions and West Midlands Police have been informed. Sandwell Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health and Protection, Councillor Elaine Costigan, said, "The issue with unlicensed charity collectors is that you have no idea where the money is going. If you are a genuine charity collector, you must get a permit from the council to operate in Sandwell. We have not issued any charity collection permits for children in need in Sandwell. Of course, we don't want to discourage children from donating to this wonderful charity, but we need to protect the public. The best thing to do is to donate directly to children in need online or over the phone, or to hold your own fundraising event. Any legitimate children in need collectors collecting on the street will have a permit, which anyone donating should ask to see before handing money over. The permit is free to apply for from Sandwell Council. Permit holders must provide the council with an audited account of what they have collected within 1 month. On its website, Children in Need said, "We don't encourage fundraisers to collect money from door to door in the street or any other public place and are unable to supply tins or buckets. Public collections undertaken for on behalf of charities in public places are regulated by law and require a licence from the relevant authorities. We would recommend that you arrange a fundraising event rather than a collection."
A man who raided firms in Quarry Bank and Briley Hill after lapsing back into his drug addiction has been spared further time behind bars. Craig Paul, aged 31, who was described as having a lengthy criminal career, had managed to resolve his drug and alcohol problems until the sudden death of a family member. Paul was with an unknown accomplice when they broke into LD Communications in High Street, Quarry Bank, where they ransacked the premises before escaping with £500 worth of distinctive mobile phone covers. He then raided the heat flow contract in Pedmore Road, Briley Hill, and got away with property, including a TV, tools and a small amount of petty cash. Geoffrey Dan, prosecuting, told Wolverhampton Crown Court, "Paul also drove away with two of the firm's vehicles, but one of them was fitted with a tracker device and police officers were able to locate and arrest him." He said Paul was caught on CCTV in the Quarry Bank shop and the owner later identified him, having been robbed by the same man 6 years earlier. Judge James Burbage, QC, told Paul burgling commercial premises was extremely serious because their owners were significantly effective and left wondering whether or not to continue in business. He told Paul of Lodge Crescent, Netherton, "They feel like their efforts could have been wasted or destroyed by people like you." But he said that because he had spent time in custody on remand since his arrest, he was prepared to give him a chance as he warned him that he would go straight to prison if he broke the law again. Paul, a man with 69 previous convictions on his criminal record, admitted to the two burglaries and he was given a 14-month jail term, suspended for 18 months, and ordered to carry out 80 hours unpaid work in the community. The judge further made him the subject of a 2-month curfew and said he accepted a sad occurrence in his recent life has put him back on drugs and alcohol. Simon Hands, for Paul, told the court his client was remorseful for the raid and he understood the impact the two crimes had on the unfortunate owners of the business. He said that since he had been held in custody after he was arrested, he was once again drug-free, adding, "There is a realistic prospect of rehabilitation."
And with that final news item from Louise, we'll now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Sue.
Goodbye from Louise.
And bye-bye from Margaret.
Goodbye, everybody.